From the Sri Satya Sai Media Center at Prashanthi Nilayam, you are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Sri Ashwin Venkateshwaran, an alumnus of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. Ashwin had the good fortune of being Swami's student right from his kindergarten to post-graduation. After completing his education, Swami handpicked him to serve in the Super Speciality Hospital in Bangalore in 2001, where he later served as a senior manager in the Department of Cardiology. He was also a blessed member of the Prashanthi Mandir Bhajan Group and is currently a postdoctoral biomedical scientist in Karolinska University Hospital in Sweden. In today's talk, he takes us through his journey of discovering Bhagwan as his guru, guide and mother. And this talk was delivered on the 8th of November 2015 as a part of the Samarpan series in Dharmakshetra, Mumbai. And with that, over to Brother Ashwin.
Beloved Bhagwan, my loving pranams at your lotus feet, respected elders, my dear sisters and brothers. My brother Abhilash has threatened to make this a more difficult task with all the kind words that he had to offer. What I do know is, as a speaker, I'm probably as dumb and hollow as these large speakers you see before you. These large black boxes, completely hollow to the voice of another person who speaks. And it's a complete honor and it's a complete privilege to try and be Bhagwan's voice today on the occasion of the celebrations of his 90th birthday here in Dharmakshetra. It always comes as a surprise to me that you can travel 800 kilometers from Bangalore and still feel that you've not left home. And I'm sure those of you who have traveled even further would know that no matter how far you may go, whichever part of the world you may go to, you will never ever leave home as long as the Sai family is around you. And all the smiling faces around me say just that right now. So thank you so much for such a warm welcome here to Mumbai. I also would like to acknowledge the fact that it's been a very busy many weeks, and I'm sure a large number of you have been busy as late as this morning with the Walk for Values program. Despite your schedule, you've made it a point to be here. It's truly an honor. Whenever people introduce me as being a person who has lived many years with Bhagwan, the truth is I don't know what to say. I'm not sure if that's a compliment by any standard, but what I do know is to Bhagwan, it never mattered. Let me take you back many, many years to when I was a young boy and we were sitting in a small group around Bhagwan and Prashanthi Nilayam. Bhagwan had the marvelous ability to ask you the most interesting questions when you least expect them. And on this day, he decided to ask a question which I thought I would be able to give a wonderful answer to. There were five or six of us around him, and he asked, "How many years have you all been with Swami?" So the first boy who had just joined the institute for his master's program said, "Bhagwan, I've been here for 2 years." Bhagwan's eyes lit up. 2 years. Went to the next person. "And how long have you been here?" And this boy said, "Swami, I joined during my undergrad days, so it's been around 5 years." And as he went from person to person and came to me, the little boy inside me was extremely excited. I was going to give him a very large number. So he came to me and he said, "And you, boy, how long have you been here?" And I said, "Baba, I've been here for 11 years. I expected a pat on my back. He smiled at me, deep compassion in his eyes, and the lesson came forward soon after. Swami patted the chair on which he was sitting on and said, "This chair has been here for 25 years. And he pointed out of the window to the tree, which was at a distance, and said, "And that tree has been here as long as Prashantinilayam has been here, over 50 years. Bhagwan has a remarkable way of putting forward a message all the time. And being a student is a matter of great humility. It is his greatness that he keeps us with him. Please do not look at it as being any of our greatness in that respect." So I should humbly confess, I'm probably a lot younger in my love and association with Bhagwan than most of you sitting here in this crowd, who I'm sure have loved him with all your heart, have imbibed his lessons, and have translated that into actions in your lives, and you continue to live that to the best of your ways. Since Brother Siddharth asked me to give a talk, I've been wondering on what I can say. You know, I see such distinguished seniors among the audience, and I know that all of you have been around Bhagwan for so many years. I'm a small boy. What is it that I can offer? And it occurred to me that if I was really asked to give a talk on the journey of one's life around Bhagwan, I would probably split this journey into a book with three chapters. And I know that all of you at some level share these three chapters with me. So as I speak, I do not speak as a student, I speak as one of you. And the remarkable relationship that we have with our Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, and the wonderful, wonderful God that we have before us to worship and to love each day. The first chapter, when we are first introduced to him, is a chapter of discovery. And if I was given a chance to give a title to that chapter, I would probably call it "Nothing Happens by Accident." You probably think that you've walked into this hall by yourself today, braving Mumbai traffic at this time of the day to be able to make it to this talk. But believe me when I say this, it's Bhagwan who has asked you to come today. Every action of ours is scripted by this mastermind, divine Lord of ours, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And I'm a perfect case in point. I have a huge number of confessions to make. When I was first given a chance to join Baba's school way back close to 26 years ago, I wasn't very keen. The very mention of a hostel, of staying far away from my parents, and I was this small. I was a little boy who couldn't even button a little, you know, button onto my shirt if it fell off. I was a child who could barely eat with my fingers, could not sit on the floor to have a meal, and Bhagwan's hostel in Kalki, it's a whole new dimension to living. And I must say that I wasn't ready for it. Just the other day, a friend of mine called me, a boy whom I had known for many, many years, and he said, "Ashwin, this is such a joke. Do you remember your first year in Baba's school? You were sitting in the back of the class. The holidays were coming by and the teacher asked, 'How many of you are not planning to come back next year?' And you were the first person to shoot up your hand. For the simplest of reasons, you were so homesick. You were missing your parents, you were missing the food that your mom would make, and you shot up your hand and said, 'I am not going to come back next year.' 26 years later, here I stand." Baba has a way of scripting each and every one of our journey to him. And I strongly believe that when he has asked you or me to come to him, there is a purpose. A very deep purpose. He has a mission for each and every one of us sitting here today. He can draw you with his miracles, but he has a stronger message to offer. Bhagwan would often compare his technique to that of Mother Yashoda. When she had to draw the child Krishna to her, she would hold out butter in her hand. And if Krishna has been a mischievous boy, and if he had to be disciplined, at the back, in the other hand, she would hold a little stick. Little Krishna would come running to her, hoping to get the butter that he so loved, and then she would take out the little stick. Bhagwan has a remarkable way of drawing us to him with his miracles, with his visiting cards, so to speak. Coincidences that happen in our life. You may have heard of Bhagwan through a book. A friend of yours may come and spoken to you about him. You may have visited one of Bhagwan's sessions in Dharmakshetra. You may have been part of one of his seva assignments, either feeding the poor or working with the sick. And all of this is a means by which he draws us to him. But once he draws us to him, what is the actual message? I have to take you back many years to a Dashara, which was celebrated in Prashanti. And as many of you who have come to Prashanti know, during each of these festivals, when people would sit around, thousands of people would flock at Prashanti Nilayam. And at the end of Bhava's talk, he would ask for prasad to be served to all those sitting there. So he called a few boys into his room, and there were boxes of laddus that needed to be served. The boys took the laddus, went out, served these laddus out to all those that had gathered. And when they came back, Bhagwan seated them around him. I was lucky to be among that small group. And he asked us a simple question. Why do you think I've asked you to take these laddus and offer them to the devotees that have gathered? Why am I giving you this opportunity to be able to do a little service? And there were a number of answers. Boys said everything from, Baba, this is a chance that you've given us. Someone said, Baba, it's a way of doing a little bit of seva. But Baba said something very beautiful, which I hold on for many years, and I'm sure this will stay with you. Baba said, when I give you an opportunity to do some seva, I'm giving you an opportunity to win merit. And that gives me an opportunity to bless you a millionfold. Think about how benevolent he is. The very opportunity to be able to do some seva for Bhagwan in whatever way. It needn't be doing something big. In the smallest of ways, you step out of Dharmakshetra this evening, you see a poor man on the street who is in need, you stretch out your hand to help. In the smallest of ways, it's an opportunity to receive his blessings a millionfold. And that to me is the actual purpose of having him actually draw us as part of a larger mission. So always remember, to me, I keep telling myself, nothing in Bhagwan's books for us is an accident. Everything is pre-planned, everything is his way. Once he draws you to him, what happens? We all go through a remarkable journey with Bhagwan. I belong to a family that has worshipped Bhagwan for many years. Even as a small child, I remember seeing Bhagwan's photo in my altar, the aartis, the pujas, the many, many prayers whenever I wanted something from him, the many petitions that I offered to him as a little child, hoping that if I was a little good boy, he would be the perfect Santa Claus. But what normally happens as we journey with Bhagwan is our relationship with him becomes a lot more intimate. And I'm sure you would all agree with me. I'm sure there are a number of people sitting in this hall here who look up to Bhagwan in a remarkable form of an intimate relationship. It can be that of a parent, a very dear mother, someone whom you go to whenever you need solace. It can be of a stern father. We all need a little bit of discipline from time to time. It can be a very, very dear friend, someone who walks with you, footprints in the sand through your entire life. It can be of a guru, a Satguru, who is not going to give you classes in English, mathematics, or geography, but is going to teach you what is the way to live. And as students, we all go through that journey. I remember my first few days in the hostel. I was so homesick. My parents at that time were living outside this country, and we are talking about the 80s, where it was even difficult to make these long distance phone calls. My first night, I was so homesick. When I was going to bed, I kept thinking about what my mother said when she dropped me off at the hostel and went back to where she was. She said, "Child, for all these years, we have worshipped him as our God. From now on, make him your mother. Make him your mother, and you will realize that you will have an incredible, incredible joy of relationship with him." So I still remember that day, as homesick as I was, I got out of my little bed, walked up to the little cabinet where I had kept his picture, and used to offer prayers to it every day, took his picture off that cabinet and kept it beside me as I slept. And that was the beginning of a remarkable relationship. I'd like to share with you a number of moments. I'm sure each and every one of you sitting here have had your wonderful moments with Bhagwan as a parent. And there are a few that come to mind as I speak. A parent is someone you can walk to whenever you have an issue at hand. You can go to a parent during a moment of sickness. You can go to a parent during a moment of gratitude. When I was a child, I remember having a classmate, which I'm sure many of my brothers here would remember, Harikesh. Now, this little boy was a very, very enthusiastic, high-energy individual. And the schedule in those days was we'd come back from the school and immediately get ready for darshan. One particular day, he got back from school and he was feeling extremely low on energy, and he didn't know what to do. He had to go back for darshan. He walked up to the, each of the rooms that we had a certain teacher assigned to it. So he walked up to the teacher in our hostel and said, "I'm feeling so tired. Please give me something that will have me feel a little better." So the teacher looked inside his room. He found a little box of glucose. So he took a little bit of water. He mixed the glucose in the water and gave it to this boy. And that's all that was really available. So he said, "Drink this, you'll feel better." The boy drank that little glass of water and he felt so much better. He went up for darshan, and in his mind he was thinking, "Baba, as my parent, I owe you gratitude. I was not feeling well. You had me feel well." So in a little piece of paper, he sort of tore from his notebook. He wrote a little message for Baba and he said, "Thank you, Swami. I'm feeling much better." And he held these in his hands and waited for Swami to come by. Swami walked among the crowd, and in his all-knowing way, he walked straight up to where Harikesh was sitting. He took that paper from him, and I was fortunate to be sitting beside him. He looked straight into his eyes and said, "Don't thank me. Thank your glucose teacher." In that single instant, Harikesh knew that the mother whom he so loved was also the God that he worshipped. And the two came together. There are innumerable other occasions that I can remember where I have witnessed these moments which have driven me to tears. These are not my experiences, these are Sai experiences. And as I said, it's with great humility that I can share these. It's His greatness that He had us with Him, it's not ours. When I was in my 11th grade, that time during the vacations, Baba happened to come to Bangalore. And if you remember, if those of you who have visited Vrindavan would know that the hostel in Vrindavan campus is in the ashram premises. Around the same time, there was a small epidemic of chickenpox that had gone around, and a few boys had to stay back because they had chickenpox and they were isolated in a small part of the hostel. One of the boys was deeply missing his parents. And in his heart, he said, "Baba, you are like my mother, you are like my father. Let me at least come and see you. I can sit at the back of the hall. I will not come close to anyone sitting there. I know I have chicken pox, but I want to see you." And this boy came out of the hostel and stood just beside the hostel, which is adjacent to the darshan ground. In those days, of course, we didn't have the large shed that we have now. We had a smaller shed called the Sairam shed. It was a circular building with just enough space for all of us to sit. And Swami, when he walked out of darshan, he saw this boy at a distance. He went around, gave darshan in the Sairam shed, and then began walking to this boy. The warden of the hostel was standing beside Swami and suddenly noticed that this boy had sneaked out of his room and is waiting now outside the hostel. And I always tell people, sometimes those of us who have been around him are very much like the shadow under the candle. We are sometimes so covered by the fact that he's so loving, so human, so remarkably physical in one sense, that we forget sometimes who he is. And I remember the warden went to him and said, "Swami, that boy has chicken pox." Swami went straight to the boy. He patted his cheek. He asked about his health. He created vibhuti for him and profusely blessed him. And the warden again said, "Swami, he has chicken pox. It's a contagious disease. It will spread." And Swami said he made a remark which I hold with me. He said, "I know that this boy has chicken pox, but my love does not know. My love does not know." How often is it, have you gone out onto the street? This morning, as I walked into the Dharmakshetra, I noticed how beautifully there was feeding going on outside Dharmakshetra, and my friend Siddharth and Abhilash were telling me that close to 5,000 people were fed. And I keep thinking in my heart, how many times have we been able to embody that single quality of Bhagwan to go out and do something beyond our physical capacity? You have a neck pain, you have shoulder pains, you have back pains, you step out of your capacity. Why? Because your love does not know. And you want to serve. I keep asking my friends, we have these discussions. A lot of people look at me and say, "You have your father's hair. And you have your mother's eyes." And I think in my heart, if we are all children of Bhagwan, what is it, that single quality that we have been able to draw from Bhagwan? Do we have Bhagwan's compassion? Do we have Bhagwan's love, His spirit of wanting to make a difference to millions of people? Do we have any of those qualities that He so stood for 85 years when He was with us physically and continues to spread through our hands and feet even after His physical demise? That is the question that we ask ourselves when we truly believe that He is our parent. What is that single quality of our dear mother that we have with us and we are carrying out to the world today. I know a number of people who have spoken to me in during my hostel days, sharing some very interesting incidents of when Bhagwan has been a true friend. I could never think about it. For years and years, I would just think, Bhagwan, how could he be a friend? He is someone who's a giver. He's going to be a parent as long as I know. But then once I heard during Bhagwan's discourse, him saying, don't walk in front of me. I'll fall behind. Don't walk behind me. I will outstrip you. Walk beside me and be my friend. And in this remarkable friendship that you can build with Bhagwan, there are innumerable experiences, innumerable lessons to learn. I'd like to share a little incident which I'm sure will leave you all smiling, giggling, chuckling. It definitely left me in all the three. This is about a friend of mine. He was much senior to me in college. His name was Amar. Now, in the hostel, one of the beautiful things of Bhagwan is he would constantly acknowledge and encourage the goodness in us. He would constantly neglect and put aside our weaknesses, but he would constantly encourage the goodness that he saw. And this particular boy had a very rare, though uncommon, trait. He could waste no food. Amar would sit down at the dining table, in the hostel, of course, it was sitting on the floor. And when he would get up, you wouldn't be able to make out whether he's sitting to eat or has gotten up after eating. His plate would be absolutely clean. It's remarkable how the small things in our life can leave us feeling highly egoistic. To Amar, it may have simply been that single quality that Bhagwan noticed. Bhagwan would tell a lot of people, a lot of students, be like this boy. He doesn't waste a single grain of rice. There are so many poor people waiting outside without two square meals to eat. How can you waste food when there are so many people outside who don't have food to eat? But in time, what happened? Amar became known as the boy who could waste no food. And even in our careers, if you think about it, as we grow in our lives, it's the small things that make you feel incredibly good about yourself, incredibly egoistic about yourself. And that is when Baba decides that the lesson must be taught. So I remember how we had the good fortune to accompany Baba to Kodaikanal. And along the way, Baba stopped at the home of a devotee. And imagine Swami walking into our home today. We would lay out a lavish spread for Swami and for all the people who accompany him. As Amar sat to eat that day, he realized that the day of reckoning had come. The host of the home laid out these large banana leaves, as is traditionally laid out in traditional meals, and they had innumerable items of food laid out on that leaf. Swami was sitting in the corner on the table that was laid out for him, and Baba would eat nothing. I've seen him sit at the table and always wondered, what is it that he eats? What is it that nourishes Swami? Nothing. He had once, when a devotee had asked Baba, Baba, are you nourished by the elements? Because we don't see you eating anything. You sit at a table and you hardly eat a single one or two morsels of food. Are you nourished by the elements? To which Swami replied, no, the elements are nourished by me. Remarkable declarations that come spot out to people. So coming back to our little story, here we were in the home of this devotee, a large spread laid out in a banana leaf. And by then, Amar had set up a reputation for himself, and everyone knew him as the boy who could waste no food. Add that to the fact that no one is going to ensure that your leaf is empty, and you have a very interesting challenge. So Swami was sitting in the corner, he got up, he was walking down the lines, and he looked at Amar and looked at all the food that was on his leaf and said, "Don't waste food." The boy began to eat slowly, even more slowly. And each time he finished an item, an enthusiastic host would come and say, "Please, you are Swami's guest, please take a little more." And before he could say anything, there was a refill on his leaf. We can laugh at this incident, but it's a lot like our lives. Think about it. A few years into professional life, we have a certain amount of money, we have a certain amount of stature in society, and what do we think? We have this little balloon that is growing in our head of who we are and what we are capable of doing. And that is when Baba decides to pull out his pin, to pop that little balloon. How many of us have gone through situations in life where we ask, "Baba, why did you do this to us? Why was there something unfair that happened at work? Why was there something unpleasant that happened in my family?" It's just that little balloon that needs to be popped, because a lesson has to be taught. So here was Amar, could eat no more, still food on his leaf, and he finally decided, "No, I am not going to be able to finish all this food." And so very gingerly, as we do in most traditional meals, he folded the upper half of the leaf across the mid rib end, had it cover the rest of the leaf such that you couldn't see what was on his plate. Swami finished his meals very quickly and began walking around the crowds. He came to Amar and he looked at him and said, "Finished your food?" And every one of us who has had that moment with Swami, when you've looked into his eyes and gone completely blank, would understand why poor Amar looked at Swami and nodded. And Swami would not stop. He then said, "Show, open your leaf, let everyone see, because everyone is still having so much food on their plate." And he looks around at everybody and says, "Such a good boy." Even on a day like today, when so much is food being served, he will not waste food. I was asking Amar later how he felt at that moment, and he drew a very interesting picture. He drew the picture of the Mahabharata war, and he said, "I felt a lot like Lord Bhishmacharya. I was like Bhishmacharya on the field, and Lord Krishna is running at me, and he wants to, with his discus, you know, threatening to throw that at me, and I fold my hands and say, 'The same Lord Krishna who is coming here to humiliate me, the same Lord Krishna must save me.'" It happens very often. I know it happens in my life when I feel that life has been unfair, and I say, "Swami, you're not being fair to me. I'm going to go to someone else." But here there was this boy who said, the same Swami, who is definitely going to humiliate me in front of all these people, the same Swami should save me. Swami would not budge. He stood there as a rock, looking at this boy saying, "Open your leaf, show everyone that you have not wasted your food." And the poor boy, prayers growing in his heart, with nothing to hold, he put both his hands on the leaf, wanting to open the half that was covering all the food, And as he tried to open with both his hands on that leaf, the leaf split into two. And the side that he opened was completely clean. Swami looked at the boy and he looked at everyone around and said, "Such a good boy." And long after Swami had left the room, this poor boy, unknown to anyone else, opened the other half of the leaf and found that in a mysterious fashion, only known to someone above us, all the food was carefully shuffled to one side of this leaf. Baba has a remarkable way of being there for you unconditionally. He will not look at your defects. He is not interested in your weaknesses. The only thing he wants to know is, do you love him? Do you deeply love him? Do you deeply have that faith? And when that comes forward from a devotee, the Lord showers his bountiful blessings in a way only he knows, and the world will never ever understand. Coming to being a teacher, as students of Bhagwan, very often he would look at us and say, "You are students of my university, but are you Swami's students?" And that question would always leave me thinking, because we have a number of students who pass through Bhagwan's university, but being Swami's student is something else. I'm sure there are a number of students of Bhagwan sitting here, well past the space where students of his university, myself included, also sit. To be Swami's student is a very special quality. And as a teacher, he has so much to offer. You know, there are moments in my life which I can never forget. As a child, I was a very naughty child. And I was a very talkative child as well. And there was a time when I had a chance to ask Bhagwan, "What is it that I can do to make you happy?" And at that time, Bhagwan looked into my eyes and said, "Less talk. You would be amazed at how much of effort I made to follow that single injunction of Bhagwan." I became so unpopular in my class because everyone would look at me and say, "This chap is a Maunam fellow. He does not talk. If there is anything that you have to speak to him, he would write, I would probably write in a little piece of paper and give it to them." And why? Because in my heart, nothing mattered. If Swami says, "Less talk, move earth and sky," less talk it will be. So imagine my confusion when 3 weeks down the line, Bhagwan calls me into the interview room and I'm feeling very happy about the fact that I've hardly spoken since the time he had asked me to speak less. And I'm waiting for Bhagwan to give me a pat on the back. And what does Bhagwan say? "Too much talk. Not here, here." And it was true. The mind chatters endlessly through day and night, no matter how quiet you may be. And Bhagwan, being the Sadguru, has very high standards of what is expected of us during such situations. Swami also has a way of having a safe face. And this episode was recounted by a friend of mine, a classmate of mine. To set the context, this was in Vrindavan. This boy was, by then, had left the institute, and he was a young professional who was working in the city. He would come every day to see Bhagwan at Vrindavan and then go back to the city where he'd be working. One day after darshan, as he was leaving towards the city, he found along the way There was a young woman who was by herself on the road, and she requested if she could be dropped in the city. As children and as young people, Baba was very strict about the divide between men and women. And the reason he had told us was that all energies must be channelized completely towards that single cause of wanting to serve Bhagwan and serving society. So quite naturally, this boy had a little bit of conflict in his head. Here there was a person who needed to be dropped. Would Bhagwan approve of my behavior or not? He stopped, gave this young woman a lift. Nothing was spoken. Dropped her off at the location she wanted to. And the next morning when he came for darshan, he wanted to know in his heart if he had done the right thing or not. Swami came by, he looked into his eyes, and he said, "No mistake." So the boy was very happy. He got up very happily, his conscience was clear, got back into this car. On his way back, very strangely, again the young woman was waiting in the same spot. And he said, Swami said, "No mistake." So he let her in again, conversations began, and he took her to the next point and dropped her there. For the next 2 days, Baba would come to him, look into his eyes and say, "No mistake." A single word that he held on to. The reason I recount this particular experience is not for the experience per se, but it's because of the human tendency to listen to Bhagwan or listen to what our mind may say and interpret that to our convenience. On the third day, when this boy came and sat for darshan, Bhagwan came to him and he was looking very upset. He looked straight into this boy's eyes and said, "Why are you so slow? I keep telling you, no mistake." This may be an episode we can laugh together about, but think about it. How often does it happen in our lives that we look at a certain situation and say, "This is the voice of Swami"? How often is it that our mind interprets that to our convenience and says, "This is the voice of Swami"? And how often does our mind lead us into paths that we very well know may or may not be the right thing to do because we believe in our hearts that this is the voice of Swami? We often interpret the voice of the Lord, and that interpretation, as it happened to this young man, may be a slight difficulty. So if I was to really give a name to this chapter of my life, and I'm sure all of you would relate to this, this would be called as, "What can I be for you, my child?" Imagine Swami asking you that question. What can I be for you, my child? Can I be your parent? Will you love me as your mother? Can I be your teacher? And can I teach you through ways both strict and lenient? Can I be a friend? And can you reach out to me during a moment of need? What can I be for you, my child? During sometimes Bhagwan's messages come across so strongly, it can truly change the way you look at life. In Kodaikanal, I remember when Bhagwan had taken a few boys along with him to Kodaikanal, and towards the end of his trip, he decided that he must recognize the effort of all the people who had contributed to Swami's stay in Kodaikanal. The cooks who had cooked for him, the washermen who had washed clothes when he was there, the police and security force that was waiting and had served upon him, the number of devotees who had come by to serve upon Swami, Swami said, I must definitely give something for all of them. One of the things that I keep seeing in Bhagwan's interactions with us is he has absolutely no reason to show gratitude to us. It's us that owe him gratitude. But any opportunity to recognize the effort of people who have served, Swami would definitely be there. So he called the security in charge and said, tomorrow I would like to give everyone some clothes and a little bit of money to take care of the stitching for these clothes. Please call all the people who had served me, let them sit in the hall, and I will give all of them clothes as well as a little money for tailoring charges. The number that was given to Swami at that time was 200 people would come. It has often occurred to me how Swami at 1 minute would be the all-knowing, the omniscient. In a minute, he would drill through your life, take the smallest portion of your life and tell you that he knows. But at another level, to be able to teach us lessons of life, he behaves like a perfect human. And in this situation, Swami said, all right, we will plan to give clothes and money for 200 people who will come tomorrow. So I remember that afternoon when Bhagwan came back into the room, he made us all go into a storeroom, pull out white safari clothes and cover them up nicely, pack them up with a little bit of money, and we had 200 packets waiting there for the next day. Come the next morning, when Swami stepped out to this hall where all of the people were gathered, 400 people were sitting there. Believe me when I say this, Swami came back into the room and he pretended to be very surprised. We had 200 packets waiting to distribute to all that had gathered, and 400 people had gathered to receive Bhagwan's blessings that morning. And so Bhagwan asked us to see if any more clothes were available. We went into the room and found there were enough clothes, but unfortunately we didn't have enough packets of money to be able to give to each of these people who had come. And I remember being one among many people there who very quietly said, Bhagwan, if you would permit, we can all collect whatever money that we have and we'll put it into these little packets so that your word to these people would be fulfilled. Swami went out for darshan that day, walked amongst the crowd, completely calm and unaffected. He walked across everyone, taking darshan. It was darshan time, so there were devotees who had gathered. He came back into this hall, and as he came back into the hall, with his hand full of letters, one of the letters fell off his hand. I remember being the boy at his feet. At that time, I took that letter and gave it to Swami, and Swami said, no, open it. Open that letter. He opened the letter. And to my surprise, and the surprise of everyone sitting in that hall, there was exactly the amount which was needed for the rest of people who were waiting outside to get Swami's blessings that day. What surprised me was not the fact that Swami could make this happen. As the all-knowing, as the omniscient, he can make anything happen. But what surprised me was what he said after that. And this is something which I would really like to leave with everyone. He said, I did not use my power for this envelope. I did not use my power for this envelope. But I want you to know that whenever you have a completely selfless thought to want to make a difference to someone, the forces of nature will make it possible. The forces of nature will make it possible. I often wonder sometimes why Bhagwan had to come into a human body and face all the hardship that a human body had to go through, particularly towards the end of Bhagwan's physical sojourn. There was so much of hardship. falls, being contained to a wheelchair. His physical body went through so much of suffering. But I believe that in his coming to into a physical body, he came here to teach us some vital lessons on what could be possible if we decided to elevate ourselves to his level of consciousness. What can I be for you, my child? Coming to the last chapter of our journey with Bhagwan, and this is something each and every one of us should ask on our birth, on his birthday, or his birthday in all of us. What can I do for you, my Lord? How long can we keep receiving the love and the grace that he showers upon us every day? You're unwell, you ask him for health, he grants health. You're having a bleak stretch in your professional life, you ask him for a career, he grants a career. You seek higher education and you seek Baba's blessings, he grants that to you. How long are we going to keep asking him? And when are we going to start saying, Baba, you have given enough, but what can I do for you? And I think in everyone's life, there is a certain moment, there is a trigger point that has you really think very, very strongly about this particular question. What can I do for you, Swami? In my life, that trigger point happened when I was in my second year undergraduate. As I mentioned, my parents were staying outside this country, but they would come to visit Baba every vacation. And whenever they would come, they would always come and spend a lot of time with both me and my brother, who were studying in his institutions. Unfortunately, the time they were visiting, Swami was in Vrindavan. And so both my parents had gone to have Swami's darshan in Vrindavan. And both me and my brother were in Prashantinilayam. Every Sunday, it was a habit, sort of a family routine, that my mom and dad would leave Vrindavan in the morning after darshan, come to Prashantinilayam, spend time with me and my brother, and go back to Vrindavan that evening. As I mentioned to you, I was very attached and still continue to be very attached to my parents. Swami, for some reason, had kept them with him in Vrindavan, and I was in Prashantinilayam waiting for that single Sunday when they would come and we would all be together as a family. Come Sunday, all of a sudden, my parents did not come. I waited very eagerly at the entrance of the hostel. The moment I got back from my school, I waited at the entrance of the hostel, waiting for my mother and father to come. They did not come. A few minutes turned into a few hours, a few hours turned into many hours. They did not come. And in my heart, I wondered, how is this possible? Every Sunday, without fail, my parents would come to see me, and here they have just not arrived. What would happen in those days is, when Swami was in Vrindavan, some of our teachers would go to Vrindavan for Swami's darshan, and they would return in the evening to fill us with stories on what had happened in Vrindavan. And so I remember feeling very disappointed that day, because my parents didn't come to see me, they did not call me to tell me why they didn't come. I had absolutely no clue as to why they were not in Prashantinilayam. That evening, when some of our teachers came back from Vrindavan, one of my teachers called me aside after the night prayer. He had just arrived from Vrindavan. He called me aside the night prayer and he said, Ashwin, can I speak to you privately? So I walked into his room and he looked very concerned. He looked very disturbed. He looked straight into my eyes and he said, Ashwin, your father was sitting in Vrindavan yesterday during darshan and he passed away. Imagine my shock. Your father was sitting at darshan. He collapsed and passed away. There was nothing that I could say. I was frozen from foot to toe. Silence can sometimes be the most effective way of expressing pain. When you are so pained and so hurt, you cannot complain. And how often do we sit in front of Swami's pictures, tears streaming down our eyes, silently in prayer? Because words cannot communicate what silence is so effectively able to. That single minute I stayed silent before this teacher of mine was the most painful and the longest minute in my life. And he looked into my eyes and said, "Your father passed away, but Swami brought him back." When I later had a chance to speak to my father about this, and I don't know if many of my brothers here were in Vrindavan at that time, but he was sitting in Trayi Vrindavan. Bhagwan was sitting on the Jula, and he was sitting in this group around him, and all of a sudden he felt a severe pain in his chest. And he told this boy who was sitting in front of him, "I'm feeling, there's a lot of discomfort, I'm sweating, and can I just put my head on your back?" So he put his head on this friend's back and forgot everything that happened after that. And what the warden later told me was, Swami was giving a discourse in the Jhula, in the small Trayi Vrindavan, and this boy and my father had collapsed. And there was Dr. Hegde, who was then the physician in Vrindavan. He felt my father's pulse, and there was no pulse. So he immediately, a person beside him got up and said, "Swami, he's gone." Swami stopped his talk. He asked them to make way. Walked straight to where my father was sitting, asked for some water, sprinkled water on this pulseless, lifeless body sprawled on the floor, and said, "Get up, your Sai Rama has come." Now, in our family, each one of us seemed to have a different relationship with Swami. So my mother always sees him more as Lord Krishna, but my father would always refer to him as Sai Rama. And the next moment, my father was back up. The next morning, Bhagwan had sent him to the hostel where an ECG and certain minor diagnostics and blood tests were done. And the doctors confirmed that he had had a major heart attack the previous day, and they were surprised that he was alive. It's been many, many years since that incident. My father is still with me, still in Prashanthinilayam. And I will be eternally grateful to Bhagwan for that single moment. And that is a single moment of reckoning. Every one of us feel that at some point in our life. When that happens, Baba, enough. We have received enough from you. What is it that we can do for you now? I work in the Satya Sai Hospital in Whitefield. And I know, for one, ever since Bhagwan has physically left us, though he continues to be with us, as much sitting here in Dharma Kshetra, listening to this talk, as much as he is in every one of your hearts, going back with you to your homes this evening, I keep asking myself, when I was graduating from college, I kept asking myself, what is Bhagwan's plan for me? There are a number of ways in which you can reach Bhagwan, and each one of you, each one of us has our own relationship. Some of us choose the path of Karma Yoga. We work because work is our worship to Bhagwan. Some of us choose the path of Bhakti Yoga because our worship, our bhajans, our kirtans, that is our worship to Bhagwan. I happened to be part of the bhajan group when I was in Prashanthinilayam. And for as long as I've known, I always thought that Bhagwan had, his plan for me was bhakti yoga. Bhajan, sankirtans, etc. But I remember a moment during Shivratri which changed all of that. So during Shivratri, as you all know, in Prashanthi Nilayam, there are night-long bhajans, and Bhagwan speaks through the night, Bhagwan asks us to sing through the night after his discourse in the evening. I remember one Shivratri where he looked at everyone in the crowd, and in his discourse, Bhagwan said, sing, chant the name of the Lord through the night. The blessings that come will be enormous. So I had made up my mind that I was going to sit there through the night and keep singing Bhagwan's praise through that night till 6 in the morning. Bhagwan left the hall, went back to his mandir, and all of a sudden, my monkey mind creeps in. It's 7 o'clock in the evening, and I am feeling hungry. So I think in my head, Baba, you had asked us to sit here and chant through the night, but you didn't tell us that we can't take a short break. And I decide that I am going to take a little break, go back to the hostel, have a quick meal, and come back to sing through the night. So I get up from the bhajan group, walk back to the hostel, and have a quick dinner. And I'm just preparing to come running back to the mandir to sit through the night and chant Swami's name, when all of a sudden, into my room walks a young boy looking very unwell. He was a classmate of mine and looking very, very unwell. And he said that he had thrown up innumerable number of times, and because it was Shivaratri, there weren't many people in the hostel. Most people were waiting in the mandir at that point. And he said, can I just spend a little time with you here in your room? So here I'm thinking, Baba had said that we should sing through the night, and yet here is an opportunity for me to be of some service to a brother of mine who's unwell. He sits for a little while in my room, and before I knew it, he becomes very unwell. He needs to keep going to the washroom to throw up. He's feeling very weak. He needs support to walk from one point to another. And he says, Ashwin, I know I'm asking for too much, but can you please, please stay back here in the hostel with me and just watch over me today? So in my mind, being a young child, I was really torn between two paths. There was one, the path of service, to be here for a brother in need when he needed it. And there was second, the path of devotion, where Bhagwan in the mandir had clearly said, sit and chant Bhagwan's name through the night. I remember being with him that whole night, and the next morning, when he was feeling much better, we very slowly went to the mandir just in time for the close of bhajans. Swami came out. He gave a wonderful discourse where he exalted the name of the Lord and the glory of Sankirtan. And in my heart, I felt so sad that I couldn't really be part of that experience when Bhagwan had said so. He walked across the hall giving darshan once that was done. And this boy who was unwell wanted Swami's blessing so he could get a place right up front, whereas I was a little at the back. I remember sitting there in the crowd looking out at this boy, and Swami walks up to him and he says something to him. The boy replies and Swami looks out into the crowd. I get the feeling he's looking in my direction and he says something else. Now I'm sitting rows and rows behind everyone else. At the end of the discourse, when Swami went back, I went back to Pavan and said, Pavan, what did Swami say? And he said, Baba walked straight to me and said, boy, how are you feeling? Swami knew. How are you feeling? And this boy who was so filled with emotion, that he was just feeling, he kept looking up at Swami. And Swami looked out into the crowd, looked into my direction and said, much, much better. In my mind, I know at that time I was thinking, what is the path for me? Is this the path of devotion? Is the path of bhakti for me? Or is it the path of work? And to me, that single word which he had said had two meanings. My friend was much, much better. And I, for one, though I could not be there sitting in the bhajan group, my being able to stretch my hand out to a friend in need was much, much better. I think my time is up, so I would like to conclude.
प्रेयकं मनोभिलाषपूरकं सदाशिवं भजाम्यहं सकललोकनायकं सुजनचित्तप्रेयकं मनोभिलाषपूरकं सुरेश्वरं गणेश्वरं सनातनात्ममानुषं नमामि तं महेश्वरं स्मरामि साई शङ्करं नमामि तं महेश्वरं स्मरामि साई
स्मरामि अहं नमामि तं महेश्वरं स्मरामि साई शङ्करम् सदा सत्स्वरूपं चिदानन्दकन्दं जगत्संभवस्थान संहारहेतुं स्वभक्तेच्छया मानुषं दर्शयन्तं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं भवद्वान्तविद्वांसमार्ताण्डमीड्यं मनोवागतीतं मुनिर्ध्यानगम्यम् जगद्व्यापकं निर्मलं निर्गुणं त्वां नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथम्
भवां बोधिमग्नातीतानां जनानां स्वपादाश्रितानां स्वभक्तिप्रियानां समुद्धारणार्थं कलौ संभवन्तं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं
सदा निम्बवृक्षस्य मूलादिवासात् सुदाश्राविणं तिक्तमप्यप्रियन्तम् तरुं कल्पवृक्षाधिकं साधयन्तं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं सदा कल्पवृक्षस्य तस्याधिमूले भवद्भावबुद्ध्या सपर्याधिसेवा ऋणां कुर्वतां भुक्तिमुक्तिप्रदन्तं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथम्
अनेकाश्रिता तर्कलीला विलासै समाविष्कृते शान भास्वत्प्रभावं भास्वत्प्रभावम् अहं भावहीनं प्रसन्नात्मभावं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथम्
सतां विश्रमाराममेवाभिरामं सदा सज्जनैः संस्तुतं सन्नमब्धि जनां मोददां भक्तभद्रप्रदन्तं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथम्
अजन्माद्यमेकं परं साक्षात् स्वयं संभवं राममेवावतीर्णं भवद्दर्शना संपुनीता प्रभोहं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं नमामीश्वरं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं